Hey, it's Scott Petrek with another episode of the Brown Zone Zone Coverage Podcast. This millennium's version of the Cardiac Kids did it again as Joe Flacco caught fire in the fourth quarter to lead a comeback win over the Bears. The Browns are 9-5 and likely need only one more win to return to the playoffs. They'll head to Houston on Sunday looking for number 10. Here to discuss, as always, is Dave Chudowski of Go, the WKYC Morning News. What's going on, Chud?
Scott, I am fired up. This is fun, man. I'm really looking forward to this conversation right now. It's just, we just haven't had much of this in our recent lives, right? I mean, I know 2020, but that was the pandemic and it just felt different for some reason. And this is just, I mean, gosh, the Browns are on the doorstep of the playoffs, the cold weather, the holidays. This is, we've talked about this before, you know, how this city would go crazy if they get in the playoffs and make a run. And we're getting close, man. I mean, I don't know how you can't be excited. And to that degree, I just don't know. And I'm curious what you think. You know, it was the energy in the stadium? Were there more tailgaters? Was the buzz back? Because the week before there wasn't.
Yeah, I don't think so, Chud, but I'm going to give that to the weather. I mean, it was crappy down there, right? So yeah. Like when I went to park, there weren't the tailgaters that there usually are. You know, and I'm not by the Muni lot. I'm at that Port Authority lot. And I think I saw one tailgate as opposed to more than that. You know, usually there's rows and rows of them. But it was, you know, the weather was nasty. I don't blame people for either showing up late or not coming when it's nasty outside. There's still orange, you know, there's still empty seats. But I think the weather had something to do with it. A buddy of mine called me last night and we were talking about this. And he's all in. I mean, he is so excited. And we're talking that if they go down and win in Houston and come back with a chance to clinch, I mean, they have a chance to clinch the playoffs this week, but you need a lot of stuff to happen. But come home on that Thursday night game with the chance to clinch the playoffs or having clinched the playoffs, either way, that place is going to be jumping on December 28th. So I think people probably have a little trepidation, a little hesitation because of all the injuries, because they've been burned before. But I think that's starting to change.
Yeah, no doubt. So someone said to me the other day, they were at the game and they felt like it feels different than anything they felt before in like 30 years. Now, I want to ask you, is that prisoner of the moment? I mean, we got 2020. All right. Now, here's the thing. The sad part is it's not that far off because either right. It is or it's not far off. You have 2020. Like I said, I don't know, that just seemed different. But yeah, sure. You beat Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. So, I mean, we can't forget about that. And then even though the 07 team didn't make the playoffs, I remember how exciting that year was. And that was a lot of fun, right? And, yeah. Of course, you had the playoff team in the early 2000s. And, I mean, that was heartbreak losing that game in Pittsburgh in the playoffs. And run, William, run. So mm-hmm. I don't want to become prisoner of the moment, but where do you think this kind of falls right now, what we're going through since, you know, what we experienced in the late 80s and then that brief period in the 90s?
Yeah, man. I point to 2002 because that felt like it was the start of something, right? It was Butch Davis' second year. They looked like they had a team that could keep it together for a while, and obviously that did not happen, and Butch wound up tearing apart that defense and, you know, was gone 2 years later. But to me, that felt like the start of something, and I really think that there was a lot of excitement for that year. You mentioned Run, William, Run. There was a lot going on that season. It felt like Butch Davis was going to be the guy for the long term, right? He had such a decorated college career. Like, teams wanted him, right, when they hired him as coach. So I think that was the last time there was this kind of excitement. But that's been 20 years, Chuck. So it's not like that was yesterday, right? Like, for me, I mean, I wasn't even on the beat full time yet. You know, I was doing some stuff with the Browns and doing some columns, but I wasn't on the beat full time. 07, there was a lot of excitement, and that felt sustainable, right? DA was young, and Braylon Edwards and Kellen Winslow the second. But then they don't get to the playoffs. They lose that terrible game in Cincinnati and, you know, the second last week. The COVID year, like you said, the COVID year was weird. There weren't fans in the stadium or not a lot of fans in the stadium. You know, I was covering the road games from home. So I'm going to go 2002. But it's weird because, this team, they're doing it without Deshaun Watson, right? So they're on a quarterback that might not be here, with a quarterback that might not be here next year in Joe Flacco. But this foundation feels pretty solid to me, right? I expect Kevin Stefanski to get an extension. I expect Andrew Berry to get an extension. So like this feels like the foundation is pretty solid to me. And the other part of it, as I mentioned, the cardiac kids at the beginning, and there's something about this team, like that when I was talking about my buddy calling me yesterday, it's I think more of a feeling of this team is going to win. And how many times has it felt like this team's going to lose, right? And even when they win, even when they're up two touchdowns, you're looking for ways, scenarios where they can figure out a way to lose. And now, and I think it was proved again Sunday against the Bears. It's okay, well, how can they pull this one out and win, right? And they did it again. And I think there's just this feeling of, I don't want to get carried away and say team of destiny, but something like that, right? Like it's almost meant to be, like this team is meant to get to the playoffs despite all the crap that it's had to go through this year. So it's hard to compare, but that's where I'm going to go on this one.
Well, I got to tell you, and we both picked the Browns to beat the Bears. I can't remember our scores. I feel like maybe you were 27-20, I was
Yes.
24-20 maybe. I think it
Yep.
was somewhere around there. So we both, they won by three. I'm gonna, and I don't know what it is, but so many times in the past, in the third or fourth quarter, down 17-7, I would have just been like, "Nah, they're done." But I really felt like they were going to come back and win. And here's the funny thing. If they catch that ball in the end zone on the Hail Mary, they lose. And this talk in the whole town, it's a completely different story this week. We always talk about that. It's amazing how one play, one missed field goal, one made field goal can change the entire conversation, right? But I just felt like they were going to win. And it was a great feeling to feel that way. And then they actually did it.
I think that's a great point. That's kind of what I was getting at, right? Like, we've talked about it before when I start writing the story, right? Because I try to post it right after the game ends. And, I mean, you write chunks of it, but you don't do the lead or, they win or lose, right? And it was 17-7. It's like, should I start the lose? And I don't know if I ever did. I think I kind of kept waiting, and then they get the turnover, and then they get the field goal. And then it felt like, okay, they're going to win this game, right? Like, so then it became, oh my gosh, they win this game. So, there's just something about, and the word's been used a million times, but I don't know if there's a better one, the resilience of this team and the fight that this team has. Kevin Stefanski pushing the right buttons. And now, not that it's only Joe Flacco, because all the quarterbacks have led game-winning drives this year. But now it's Flacco. I think he gives an added dimension of confidence, and that's what his teammates are saying, right? From the second he signed, there was, right, as crazy as it seems, they're on their fourth quarterback, right? And they weren't even on the fourth one because DTR was still starting. But when Flacco signed just to the practice squad, to me, it felt like a boost to the confidence in the locker room, and I think you can carry it to the fan base too, that hey, we got a guy that's done this before. And I think that continues to carry forward. And Greg Newsom talked about it, like everybody's like, as soon as he came, it's like, hey, this may give us a chance to make a run here. And I just don't, and that's so unusual for a fourth quarterback that gets added to your roster, on November 20th.
How does it feel as Scott Petrak to not be the most popular guy in Cleveland anymore and to have to take a back seat to Joe
Yeah,
Flacco?
it's rough. The ego took a hit, Judd. Yeah.
This guy, I mean, and one thing I will say though is I wouldn't have had that confidence if they were on the road, and we'll get down to that later in this show about the difference on the road and home. I felt like they could win a lot, and listen, the Bears are playing better, and we documented that last week. And I think we told people not to sleep on them, and they're a better team than what their record shows. That said, it's not like they, beat the Eagles or well, I guess they did beat the 49ers already. But
Right.
the bottom line is, it was just the Bears, but it was at home. I might have felt a little different if it was on the road, but who cares, man? 7-1 at home. This team is amazing at home. They're like a different club.
Yeah, and it's stark. And to me, it starts with, I mean, there's the energy from the crowd. right? Like you just talked about. There's no doubt about that. And the defense feeds off it. It's really interesting because I've been every road game, right? It's really interesting to see the defense at home versus the road. And not that they don't, you know, they're flying around on the road too. And even though they've been so much worse on the road, or maybe you could phrase it a different, not as good, you're not nearly as good on the road. I feel like they still have the pieces to do what they need to do on the road. And like I know the sample size is big enough, but I still feel like they're going to go on the road one of these weeks, and maybe it's this Sunday, and the defense is going to play really well because they have the pieces and they have Jim Schwartz. But it hasn't happened yet. And a big part of that is at home, they have this energy. The offensive line's a beat slow getting off the ball, right? We saw how many times do we see Dalvin Tomlinson or Shelby Harris at defensive tackle burst through. And part of that's because the line is, you know, just a fraction slow getting off the snap count because you can't hear the count or it's a silent count. So that does help. Like that noise, that energy. You see Greg Newsome pumping up the crowd after between plays, Martin Emerson Jr. So I to me, Chud, like that's the biggest reason why this team is better at home. It's because the defense plays better, and that's tied into the energy from the crowd.
Yeah. Let's go back to Flacco, then hit the defense. The notes I have written down for Flacco is he's getting guys involved, like multiple guys. Like, I mean, you know, it's he's spreading the ball around. He looks like an NFL quarterback, and you've talked about this. You said this on another podcast that he resembles the type of quarterback you like, you know, that guy
Yeah.
that sits in the pocket. And then the other thing, man, that pass to Cooper was incredible, the touchdown. I mean, especially with the view they showed on TV, how, you know, he put it into place, he threaded the needle, and that was outstanding. You know, but then I write, but still, you know, the first three quarters were not pretty. I know all the interceptions weren't his fault, but he still threw three. And I'm concerned. And while I want to, you know, bow down to him and say thank you for giving us a chance, I am not going to lie and say I am a little bit concerned that he could cost you a game down the line as well. So, I mean, and I know all cornerbacks can do that, but I'm just, you know, there is a little bit of concern still for me.
I get that. I do. To me, the question is, and it's been since that Rams game, is this sustainable? And we probably don't have the definitive answer yet, but I'm in the yes, it is camp, Chud. I think he's healthy. I think he moves better than I thought he would for a guy that's 38. You see him running those bootlegs, you see him running those play action fakes. You see him buying enough time to get out and make a play. Even that Cooper play, right? He's rolling right and makes the throw. So his arm's obviously still elite. I think I've seen enough to say that this Joe Flacco is sustainable. Now, will we see him throw interceptions? Yeah, I think that's fair to say. He's thrown five in three games. Were they all his fault? No. Like, you know, Cedric Tillman gets runs into a defender against God, who'd they play before the Bears? There's two, or the Jaguars, right? Tillman runs into a defender. I don't know if that's a Flacco fault. Last week, Tillman doesn't cut in, and Flacco throws that first pick. That feels like the receiver's fault to me. The second, the pick six, it goes off Tillman's hands, right? Like, so it's not all Joe Flacco, but there were a couple other throws that could have been intercepted. So I think that happens when, first of all, you're asking a guy to throw the ball a ton because the run game's not what it used to be. And a lot of that's because you're so banged up across the offensive line. So you're asking him to throw a ton. He's not afraid to throw into tight windows. There's still an adjustment period to working with the receivers for the first time. So I think interceptions can happen, and they probably will continue to happen. But he makes enough big plays. And I think it's six out of his last seven games, Chuck. Now this stretches back like 3 years. He's thrown for at least 250 yards. So you're going to be able to move the ball. And that wasn't always the case early in the year with the quarterback situation, right? They weren't throwing for 250 yards a game. He's thrown for 300 the last two games, right? And touchdowns through the air. Like that wasn't happening. So I think any mistakes that he makes are balanced by the big play capability, the ability to convert third and longs, right? The ability to put up points and do it in a hurry. So I think this is sustainable from a Joe Flacco perspective. Now they have to overcome all these injuries, and the offensive line is decimated, and they don't have any safeties, right? Like, so there's other issues for this team, but from a Joe Flacco only, I think he can continue to do what he's doing.
And it's incredible too to think he's doing it with the offensive line. I mean, can you believe that this is, I mean, what did they have? One guy, one starter on the offensive line there at the end of the, and for most of the game, with Petonio getting hurt, and that's a huge blow. I guess twofold here. Give us an update on where we stand with the injuries on the offensive line, and also how the heck are they doing this?
Well, we're doing this, taping this Wednesday morning. So we don't have any great updates. What I'll tell you is when I talked to Joe Bitonio briefly after the game, he said they were back spasms. And I don't know if anybody's had those. I've had them, and they're freaking brutal, right? Like you lock up and you can't move. And sometimes it happens for no reason. I think it's obviously there's football factor in there. You're getting hit all the time. But to me, that doesn't feel like something that's going to sideline him for a long time. Now, it's also fickle, and maybe it does. I know Joe Thomas told me when I was writing about him going to the Hall of Fame, he played like the last 6 weeks of his season once with back spasms, and it was the toughest thing he ever had to do. So I know Joe Bitonio, I know he's going to do everything he can to play. I think there's reason to be optimistic that he can come back this week. You just got to figure out a way to let the back loosen up, right? And then hope it stays that way. And then Ethan Posick, it's a stinger. Those are a little weird, but he felt like he was close last week. Like just, you get a vibe for guys, whether they're watching practice, whether you see him walking around. And I saw both of those things from Posick last week. So I think it's fair to hope that both those guys could come back this week. And that's huge because if you get Posick and Bitonio back and playing at a decent level, then you got your three guys inside. And then you can figure out what to do with tackle, right? I mean, we know who's going to play a tackle, but you can figure out how to help those guys slide the line, all those things that you do from a protection standpoint. When you're compromised in the middle as well, then it's just hard, right? It's hard to run. There's no cohesion. So I think the run game would be better with Posick and Bitonio back. I think you can do things in protection-wise. So I think there's reason to hope that that happens if you're a Browns fan, and that would be a big boost. Because they're just not the same. I mean, when you got four backup guys, I mean, Nick Harris is good in pass protection. I think he struggles in some of the run stuff against big guys, like in third and short, he can be compromised. Michael Dunn's trying his butt off. He gets a couple of big holds. The tackles, we know that they're struggling out there, especially James Hudson the third. So they need Posick and Bitonio back.
Yeah, I like how you're comparing your golf back injuries to NFL players, but
Well, yeah.
hey.
It's even dishwashing injuries, Chuck. It's not just golf.
Oh, okay. I'm
Yeah.
sorry.
Yeah, it
Yeah.
just happens to me.
Hey, is Bitonio your favorite interview? I mean, I think is he your go-to guy?
He's fantastic. Yeah, I would probably say he is. He's one, we do a good guy, the guy that's most whatever helpful with the media. And he's won it. He's won, I think he won it 3 years in a row. We should probably rename it after him. He's up there, and you can. What I like about him, first of all, he's super friendly, but he'll be honest with you. And like you can go to him off the record, just ask him something, and he'll tell you. You go on the record, like I wrote about Stefanski last week, and I said, "Hey Joel, here's what I need. I mean, I want to ask you about Kevin after the group interview." And he's great, right? Like he's just great, real good guy. So yeah, I think he would be my number one guy in there.
Yeah, no question. All right, back to the defense. They just kept him in the game all game long. And you think about it, and I was sitting there thinking they had 17 points, and seven of them were a pick six. I mean, the defense, I mean, I don't know
Seven
who's
more, Chud, were an interception return to the 1 yard line.
yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
That's a good point. So I mean, really, the defense was incredible. So I always ask you, bronze, silver, gold, who gets your gold, Flacco or the defense?
I'm gonna go with defense. I mean, they don't win the game without either, but if that defense doesn't get to continue to get the stops, I think there were 8 3-and-outs and 10 punts forced by the defense. They gave up one drive, and it was a field goal drive where they kind of ran a couple of like jet sweep pitch outs. They picked up a couple first downs and then they kicked a field goal. The defense kept him in the game. Cam Mitchell makes that fourth and one trip up of Justin Fields, which is huge. Not only does it give the Browns a ball back to start the fourth quarter, it keeps them out of field goal range because they were right on the board of field goal range. So it takes points off the board. Alex Wright makes a third and one stop either on the next drive or two drives later. The defense was outstanding. I mean, they gave three, in my mind, they gave 3 points. And you can win a lot of games doing that. So I would go defense. Even though Flacco was amazing in the fourth quarter, I'd still go defense.
This is getting out of hand now with Myles Garrett, don't you think?
The penalties? The lack
yeah.
of penalties?
Well,
it's
yeah, I mean.
Crazy. I mean, there's plays. I mean, you're watching on TV, right? And I would go back and watch on TV. But live, there's two or three a game where you go, how's that not a flag? And he looks at the official, and the official's looking right at him. And I don't get it. I really don't. You know, I do think part of it is the officials don't want to call hold all the time because, you know, this is an offensive game. And it's, you know, it's bad for entertainment purposes when you're walking back 10 yards every play. But that doesn't mean you can't call any of them. And we see the Browns get called for holds, right? So I don't get it. I think Myles Garrett has been too good that he's earned the right to get some of these calls. And I'm not saying they should give him fake calls. He's earned the right to get what he deserves. And he deserves calls against the other team. There's holds, and there's multiple holds. And to me, there's egregious holds. Now, it's not the easiest thing to officiate. And, you know, sometimes it looks like a hold, but the guy's got a really good grip inside, and that's allowed. You know, why Teller does that. So I don't think every example that fans point to should be called holds, but there are, you know, if they called five a game, I don't think that would be outlandish. I really don't. And that changes the game, right? All of a sudden you go from whatever, second and 10 to second and 20 or whatever that situation is. A first down gets picked up and instead, you know, it's third and 12 instead of a first down. Like all those things matter. So I can't believe he didn't get more calls after that outburst the week before. I know Stefanski's going to continue to, you know, get on the refs, the officials about it. And I thought it was interesting, Chad, and I'd like to hear what you think. Kevin Stefanski was over the top in his praise for Myles Garrett on Monday. And Jim Schwartz was kind of last week, too, talking about how great he played down the stretch. And even though he didn't have any sacks, never seen him rush harder than those last two drives. And he won every, you know, every pass rush rep. And that's unlike Kevin Stefanski, the Monday, right? He's defensive of the player year. It's not close. I don't think there's anybody else in the realm, same realm. Like, Stefanski doesn't do that. So, to me, I'm just wondering why he felt the need to do that at this time. My guess is it's his best defensive player has gone four games in a row without a sack, feels like he's getting held every time, and is getting frustrated. And I think that's kind of like a public confidence boost. Like, hey, Miles, we still think you're unbelievable. We have your back, and we're going to need you these last three games, whether or not you're getting any flags or not.
Well, I think there's a couple things. I'm going to give you three things. Number one, I agree everything you just said there. Yeah, I mean, obviously it didn't work when Miles said it. He paid a big check, and it didn't work at least so far, right? So maybe that's part of it. Number two, could be some campaigning for MVP, which, you know, like you said, is not necessarily his style. But number three, I think we're starting to see Stefanski a little bit come out of a shell. And I don't mean he was completely in a shell, but don't you feel like, you know how when we talk about this before, like we've seen it with the Indians in 95 and the Browns in the 80s. You know when teams start winning and you get good and the Cavaliers in 2015, 16, 17, 18, like J.R. Smith when, you know, he didn't wear the shirt in the parade and you start like falling in love with guys and they become your – you know, heroes. And, you know, I don't know if I'm saying this well, but basically what I'm saying is Stefanski's kind of breaking out a little bit. You know, the Browns even, did you see them tweet out his reaction after the Cooper touchdown and after the Hail Mary was almost caught? You know, you're seeing the locker room interviews with them now. Basically what I'm saying is you're starting to get an emotional tie with Kevin Stefanski, I think, and we're seeing them a little bit different. And what do you think about that? Am I way off on that, or do you see some of that?
Oh, not at all. You're exactly right. I'm so glad you brought that up. The NFL Films had it mic'd up, so they did that on the Inside the NFL show I watched last night. You're starting to see more of his personality. You mentioned those locker room videos, which are must-watch after the game. And this one, it was a, he set a career high for F-bombs, right? At least that I've seen. And that's, and I knew I always had that in him, but I think he is starting to let more of his personality show. And we talk about wanting to play, I talk about wanting to play amateur psychologist, right? And is that because, hey, they're winning games and he's just, it's just human nature. Like you just feel better. You feel more happy. You're right. You're happier. You just feel like letting some stuff show. I think that's part of it. I think part of it is, and it's also human nature. I think he knows he's going to get a contract extension. And that takes, like, that's a huge relief, right? If you're a coach, you go, oh my gosh, I'm going to get this contract extension and I'm going to be set. And I'm going to, you know, it's going to keep me paid and with employed for the next 4 years, whatever it is. Like, I think that is human nature and that makes all the sense in the world to me. So, yeah, I think all of that is part of it. I think the way they're winning games, if you're a coach, you're like, this is great. And you, I'm sure he feels like he's doing a great job, right? Like he's winning games with all these backups, like all the things we talked about that have made this a great year for Kevin Stefanski and have made him a legitimate Coach of the Year candidate. Like he's got to feel all that. And I think that just raises your, you know, you kind of put your shoulders back and your head up because you're feeling good about yourself. And I think that's, I do think that's what we're seeing. And when you have that, I think you're more apt to stand up for your guys and you're more apt to just speak freely. So I think it's all of that combined, but I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, because we've seen it the other way around so many years. I mean, you know, Chudzinski is one. I remember being in those press conferences every week, and every week he looked more tired, more worn down. It just beats you down. And you know, I've seen the health of some of these coaches decline over a year or two, and yeah, the stress level. So it's complete opposite right now as Stefanski.
Yeah, the Chud is a talking to Chud about Chud is a perfect example. By I mean by the end of that season, he was just running on fumes.
Yeah, I mean it was brutal. It really was. It was tough. And anyway, we could talk more about that another time because I have some stories about that. But I don't want to dive off the bridge off the diving board into that topic. But yeah, you know, and back to Garrett too. I mean, listen, you always talk about how you don't like to blame officials, and you're strong on that. And even with all the teams, and you know, when it comes to NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, you know, sometimes I, you know, you hear fans complain. You know, a good one is, I mean, when Ohio State loses, oh man, Ohio State fans, they're all over the refs all the time, right? I mean, like, yeah, you just see it. But I have to tell you, I have a buddy who keeps texting me about Garrett, and he sent me some videos. Like, I see it with my own eyes while I'm watching the game. But boy, when you get pelted with the emails and and you see it on Twitter, I mean, it's egregious. I mean, it is bad. Like, this is one of the top five or three moments I can think where fans really have a beef, and Myles Garrett has a beef with the referees. I mean, this is really bad.
Yeah, and it's not just one example, right? It's not like an isolated
Yeah.
incident. It's every week, and I think it might even be getting worse because they are playing, and it's weird. I don't remember if we talked about this last week or not, but Jim Schwartz mentioned that when a team when a guy is double teamed, the officials kind of say, okay, anything goes with the double team because two guys are supposed to stop you, and their mechanics take them somewhere else. Like their eyes, okay, I'm not going to look for holding here because it's a double team. Well, first of all, that's tough on Miles because he gets double teamed all the time. And he fights through it. And then maybe they missed that he fights through. And then a second guy is raking him down, right? Like, and that's not, and Miles, like, that's not an excuse. Like, it's got to all be officiated the same way. And I agree with him. And not in his triple teams. Like, that was part of Stefanski's, you know, when he was talking about Miles the other day, is go back and watch some of these plays. And it's guys are diving at his legs. He's fighting through receiver, running back, tight end, left tackle, left guard. Like, it's unbelievable what he's going through. And he's still doing it. He's still getting to the quarterback. You know, he didn't have any sacks last week, but he was in Justin Fields' face a lot. So, yeah, the calls are egregious. But on top of that is he's playing so hard and still impacting the game. It's really impressive. And I think He might not win Defensive Player of the Year, even though he's second in the betting lines. He's second to Micah Parsons. So if he finishes strong and the Browns go to the playoffs, he's going to get serious consideration. But it shouldn't be all about sacks because his impact goes way beyond sacks. And we've seen it the last four games when he hasn't had sacks. In three of those games, I think he's still been downright dominant.
Yeah, let's go back to the offense. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because I got a bunch of other topics I want to hit, but is the running game just dead right now? Can we get it back?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is dead. Certainly dead the other day, and it's going to be rough against Houston. I don't know how they are all season long. I'm going to look that up as we're talking here. But
Tough defense.
I know they were really good against Derrick Henry the other day, right? I watched that game. He didn't have anywhere to run, so it's probably going to be hard against Houston to run the ball. I don't want to give up on the run game, period. You got Bill Callahan, the line coach. He's good at, designing the run, the schemes. It needs to be tweaked. But to me, the biggest issue is, and there's, I mean, there's a, everything's involved, right? I think Jerome Ford on a couple of those sweeps hasn't pressed it upfield quick enough, and he lets it get strung out, and then it turns into a negative play. Nick Harris gets beat a couple of times, and that leads to negative plays. I mean, it's, individual guys. But I think the bigger picture issue is, when you're without three or four of your starting offensive linemen, you just don't have the same chemistry, cohesion, timing. And I think that's part of it. And I think they might be able to figure that out. Like I mentioned, getting Petonio and Posick back will help. So I think at some point they're going to be able to run the game, run the ball, at least at a sufficient level. I just wouldn't bank on that happening Sunday in Houston.
Yeah. Scott, you're not a Jersey guy really, are you? Like, would you go
I
and
am
buy a
not
jersey
a
with him?
Jersey
Yeah.
guy. I am not.
Yeah, right. Okay. I have one jersey and it does not have a player on the back of it. I'm not saying it's bad to do that. I'm just
Sure,
saying
no.
I think one of the reasons I stopped as a fan when I was younger was because then, like, especially at the Indians, you'd get one and then they'd get traded or they would leave with free agency and then you'd be stuck with the jersey. But and
Sure.
that's kind of a joke. That's kind of a joke with Browns fans too. It's like, how many jerseys do you see at the stadium with names of guys that aren't on the team anymore, right?
Exactly.
But basically, what I'm bringing up, and I know Petonio would be a jersey you'd go buy. And if I take Flacco, Garrett, Chubb out of the mix, and I know you're not going to go buy a kicker jersey. So basically, by eliminating those names, if you're going to go buy a jersey right now with a name on the back of it, I want to know who it is because I'm going to tell you right now who I'm going to buy.
Like, is this me personally, or am I recommending it for fans?
Whatever floats your boat.
All right.
I mean,
Who do I think would
like,
be a
I know, like, I know you would buy a Betonio jersey, right? Because he's your go-to guy. Like, I'm getting,
Yeah,
but like, if
right.
there's one guy,
Yeah, I mean, I bought my wife a Joe Thomas jersey once because she's a big Joe Thomas fan.
okay.
Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah,
Maybe, all right,
Petonio is such a great. I'm just saying,
let me.
I would lean toward Northwestern guy. So whether that's, Anthony Walker's a good dude,
All right, let me re-ask this question. It's not based on like anything like that, like
Okay.
good dudes or
Yeah.
amazing players like Joe Thomas.
Yeah.
A guy that's just hot right now that you're
Yeah.
excited about.
Yeah.
Let me just give
Well.
you my
All
guy.
right.
Let
Are
me give you my guy.
you lead me into David
I'm
Njoku?
yes, yes. I'm thank you. You figured it out.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great call. And he's going to be here for a while, right? Yeah.
I love this. Here, I was still in the sports department when he came along. What year did he come? Was it 16,
17,
17,
17, 17.
17? All right. And I remember when they drafted him, I remember looking at him. Remember what were your thoughts the first time you saw him? I mean, the guy is like chiseled, right? I mean,
Oh,
he's
my God.
built like a brick. And I just thought, man, this guy is going to be awesome. And then he didn't live up to it. And I was kind of bummed out. So I am really fired up and happy to see him have success. And I have to be honest with you, like, I know Amari Cooper's your number one guy, but like right now, Njoku, man, I have so much confidence in him, and I think he is such a difference maker for Flacco in this offense. It's incredible.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt. And he's playing at a high level, a really, really, really high level. Here's what I think is interesting about him, Chud, is First of all, he's matured not only as a player, he's matured off the field. And when Kevin Stefanski goes out of his way to talk about what a great teammate he is and one of the best teammates he's ever been around, that means a lot. And there's no way that doesn't get said 2 years ago, right? Maybe by last year he had gotten to that point, but it wasn't said in 2020, 2021. In fact, and I'm looking forward to asking Njoku about that hopefully today. He did Inside the NFL last night, and you mentioned about doing being chiseled. Of course, he does it shirtless, the interview on Inside the NFL. But he talked about when Stefanski got here in 2020 that they did not see eye to eye. And he actually said hate. He goes, he stopped short of saying we hated each other, but he goes, it was, I don't know if he said it was close, but his point was that they did not get along in 2020. And now for Stefanski to say what he's saying in 2023 means Njoku has made huge strides as a person and as a teammate. So I think that's really interesting. We've seen him obviously evolve as a player, right? He was always, like you said, he was always the biggest guy. He always could jump out of the gym, right? He was a national high jump guy. But it didn't translate, right? Like it didn't translate to consistent production. Too many drops, too many easy drops. And at some point it switched to not that he never drops the ball anymore, but it switched to he's way more reliable, whether you're watching in practice or the games. He became a great blocker. And like that was part of this transformation, is that he started being really good blocker in the run game, even in the pass game, especially in the run game. And now he's whatever, a top five tight end in this league. So the evolution is really remarkable, but it also makes me think that, so now he deserves all the credit he's getting right now. And Andrew Berry deserves the credit for signing him to the extension. But I also think in credit for the patience that the front office and coaching staff have shown. But it's also interesting that, for I would say until last year, Njoku was a bust is too strong, but he underachieved, right? He underachieved for his draft status. He underachieved for picking up the 5th-year option on his rookie contract. He underachieved for the extension. So let's say for 5 years, he underachieved, and then now he's finally reaching that potential and achieving. I just think it's an interesting case study, right? Because at some point, you could have given up on him and he could have gone somewhere else and been good, and you'd be like, well, geez, it took him 7 years. We weren't going to wait that long. But because you did, because you had that patience and you saw incremental growth, you have this huge payoff right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no question. It's been fun to watch.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought up Barry, because that was going to be one of my last questions for you before we move on to Houston. It's easy to dog these guys when things aren't going good, and boy, he was dodging bullets in that press conference, and Watson gets hurt, and Dobbs is gone, and but hey, now he's got Flacco, and even Flacco in the press conference, it stood out to me on
Yeah.
Sunday when he talked about the guys that have been picked to be on this roster. And when you have a 38-year-old Super Bowl MVP talking about the makeup of a roster, how do you not give Andrew Berry credit?
You have to. And I feel like I've been a little slow, right? I've been all over Kevin Stefanski deserves all the credit in the world, and he does. But Andrew Berry and his staff also do. When you see this team winning with the number of backups it's winning with, how do you not give credit to the guys, the people? It's not just guys, the people that brought in the talent, right? That brought in the back of the roster guys that found undrafted safety Ronnie Hickman, who started and played just about every snap the last 2 weeks. And I think he's played really well. Who found Shelby Harris in whenever they signed in May or June, July, to come in. And he had a big impact the other day at defensive tackle. Dalvin Tomlinson. It's been great, and he was your number one free agent, right? We can go down the list. The fact that they traded for Dustin Hopkins, right? They could have found somebody else, and somebody else might have been fine, but he wouldn't have been Dustin Hopkins. And I'm sure luck is involved in some of these, but that doesn't mean they don't get credit. Jaron Christian is starting your left tackle for the last 7 games, and he's held up, and he was on the street. Daron Harmon played a bunch of safety. He was on the street like during this season. So at the pro personnel department, the college scouts, they all deserve credit, and it starts with Andrew Berry. And I'm glad you brought that up. And he's right along there. I think he's going to get that extension just like Kevin Stefanski, because he inherited a pretty good roster, and I think he really rounded it out and found its depth. And you know, maybe he lucked into Joe Flacco, but and if Joe Flacco ends up being the guy that takes him to the playoffs and wins a playoff game or two, you know, maybe part of that's luck. But Andrew Berry had other options. There's other guys out there. Every other team in the league had a chance to sign Joe Flacco forever, and they were the team that signed him. So, yeah, he deserves a bunch of credit.
Yeah, so why would you say he lucked into it then if every team could have gotten him?
Well, I mean, I guess because if, well, I guess because they could have had Joe Flacco at any point instead of PJ Walker, and it would have been better off, right? So
Yeah.
like there was a conscious decision not to sign Joe Flacco for whatever reason, money. Maybe they figured Joe Flacco didn't want to be the third quarterback, whatever those scenarios are. And then when it was absolutely necessary that they had no choice but to go get another quarterback, they picked the right one. And like I said, he was not the only guy out there, right? Nick Foles is the guy that was out there. And Nick Foles would have made some sense. He's been in a similar role, but they went and got Joe Flacco. And for whatever reason, it's working. And yeah, I mean, you give credit to the guy that went and pulled the trigger on it.
Yeah, and we talked about it weeks ago, going out and getting Hopkins. I mean, they admitted they were wrong and they righted that mistake. And boy, it's a good thing they did. All right, one last thing here. Ravens win to improve to 11-3, so they stay two games ahead of the Browns, and there's three games left. But Scott, they put out the playoff scenario. The Browns could actually clinch the playoffs this week.
Yeah, you know, when you talked at the beginning, Chud, about, you know, where this ranks and how this season feels, you know, and I should remember this, but in 2020, like, I don't remember 3 weeks left the Browns having a chance to clinch the playoffs. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they did, and I just don't remember that, right? But they needed to win the last week to get into the playoffs that year. So, like, this feels early for a Browns team to have playoff clinching scenarios, right? In my 20 years, this can only be, I mean, at the most, it's like the second time, right? Maybe in 2014, there were playoff clinching scenarios at some point at the end, right? Maybe they could have clinched in that second last week in Cincinnati. So let's call it three times. But at my the point stands that there's not a whole lot of times where we're talking playoff clinching scenarios, right? It's usually we're talking coaching changes, or you've come up with this elaborate plan for them to backdoor in, right? If they win their last games and everybody else loses all their games, maybe there's a miracle chance. So this is just unusual, and it's cool. And if you're a fan, you're watching these games this weekend going, okay, we need this to happen, this to happen, this to happen. And, you know, they're far-fetched, right? This week, the Browns need to win. That's number one. They need to win in any scenario. And then, you know, one of them is Cincinnati loss, Denver loss or tie, Buffalo loss, Miami win or tie, and Indy loss or tie. And that's one of eight different scenarios. One of the most common is you need Pittsburgh to lose or tie, and you need Buffalo or Denver to lose. And then you can start thinking about it. So, you know, Buffalo plays the Chargers. Buffalo's playing really well, so that seems unlikely. Denver plays the Patriots. You know, Patriots aren't good this year, so that seems unlikely. So, you know, I would not expect the Browns to clinch the playoffs this week, even if they beat Houston. But there is a chance. It gives you something to pay attention to. Certainly, it's really important to pay attention to. And then I think that means also if they win this week, then they can clinch next week with the win against the Jets.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't see it happening this week, but like you said, it's fun to talk about. I said it on the morning show this morning. I said this is not something we do often, so enjoy it.
Right?
This is
Yeah.
fun. I'm kind of, it's like exactly what you just said. So, all right. Anything else from last week before we get on to Houston?
No, we hit all the things I wanted to.
Awesome. All right.
Nice work.
Hey, we've only been doing this together since
Yeah,
2008.
right. Jesus, I'm old. You're not old, Chud, but I'm old.
Dude, I'm right behind you. What are
I
you
know.
talking about? Hey, my back, I didn't bring this up earlier, but my back's been killing me lately.
See?
It's a yeah, it's not good.
It's all that heavy weight you're lifting.
All right. I think it's getting up at 2:30 in the morning, to be
Yeah,
honest
that'll
with you.
do it.
But
Yeah.
yeah. All right. Well, it looks like We don't know for sure, but it's not looking good for Stroud, right? I mean, it looks like we're
Yeah.
going to see Keenum, but that's not a for sure yet.
It's not for sure. I mean, we got a week left here, but the reports out of Houston and multiple reports out of Houston say unlikely. Still experiencing symptoms from the concussion, which obviously is not good more than a week after the concussion. So yeah, it looks like Case Keenum, and that's, I mean, obviously that's huge. CJ Stroud is playing at a, kind of like an MVP level, right? I know he was getting talk about that. So yeah, that'd be huge if it's Case Keenum and not CJ Stroud on top of the other injuries that Houston's had, right? They're without Tank Dell, one of the receivers. They played, and he's out for the season. They played without Nico Collins, another receiver. They played without Will Anderson. I think they took him number two last year in the draft, two or three, the pass rusher out of Alabama. I don't know how those guys are looking for this week, but I know they played without him on Sunday when they came back. Keenum led them back to beat the Titans in overtime.
Yeah, but then they have Noah Brown step up at wide receiver, and they have Dalton Schultz at tight end.
Yes.
They still have some weapons, and I'll tell you that defense is pretty. You alluded to it earlier. This is going to be a test. That's my concern is the defense.
Yeah, I looked up the stats. They're second, Houston's second against the run in yards per attempt, and they're sixth overall in yards per game. So it's going to be tough for the Browns to run the ball on them. Yes, no doubt about it.
I can't wait for Twitter complaining about not running the
Yeah,
ball if
right?
Flacco dials
Yeah.
up about 45 passes.
Yep.
All right. Yeah, it's, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, with where these two teams lie in the wild card standings, it's definitely interesting that this is a battle here at the end of the year. I mean, I guess my point is, I don't think we thought that this game at the beginning of the year was going to have such implications like it does.
Well, no, you're exactly right. And I mean, Houston's been bad, like really, really bad. They've cycled through coaches, right? I think they had two or three one and done coaches. And D'Amico Ryans has stepped in, and you talk about coach of the year candidates, he's certainly up there. You get a new coach, you get a new quarterback, and things can change in a hurry. And it's a bad division, that helps. But yeah, they're a good team. They have talent. They're playing at a high level. So yeah, this game went from, like we talked about, you play the schedule game in May, this was a sure win, and that's not a sure win. And I know it opened it with the Texans as a point and a half favorite. I don't know if that's changed with the quarterback news or not.
Well, I saw 2.5.
Still, okay.
Let's take a look and see. Let's see if it's changed here real quickly. As we talk here, yeah, 2.5. So
Yeah,
that's what I have on this one app that I'm looking at, 2.5. All right, you want to get to it? Prediction time.
real quick, let's do can we do a quick trivia before we get to prediction?
Oh yeah,
Yeah,
sure.
right.
Trivia that I will not get right.
Exactly. All right. So Ben Roethlisberger was, let me find the exact question here. 26-2-1 in the regular season against the Browns. So we're not counting a loss to Baker Mayfield in the playoffs. Who were the Browns quarterbacks in the two losses? Regular season losses.
Okay, I want to go back, and the one win was Thursday night. I want to say back in 2000. What year did Roethlisberger start?
04.
04. Okay. So it was, I think it was 05, maybe. Oh, it was in between 04 and 06 when they beat the Steelers on Thursday night. I'm going to say Tim Couch is one of them. No?
No.
Was it Holcomb?
Nope. I think you're confusing. They beat Couch one in Pittsburgh on a Sunday night, but it was before
Sunday night.
it was 2003. It was before Ben got there.
Oh, it
Yep.
was that's why I asked you.
Yep.
That's why I asked
Yeah.
you what year Ben started.
Yeah.
Yep. So 2003.
Yeah.
It was a Sunday night. Didn't they beat him on a Thursday night too?
That I think that's the game you're talking about, but that was not until 2009. Eric Mangini,
Okay.
remember, it was freezing, and Ben like didn't want to go on the field and warm up, and he was thrown in the tunnel because it was so cold, and the Browns beat him, and it's 2009. Brady Quinn.
It was Brady.
Yep.
All right.
And then the second one was
Wow.
2014 when they were off to that great start, and that was Brian Hoyer.
Yeah, Hoyer. Okay.
Yeah. So I did not. I would have said DA and Hoyer. I knew the Hoyer one. I would have said Anderson instead of Quinn. So I would have gotten that one wrong. Again, Zach, our buddy on Twitter. And so that's his question. Then going for next week or whenever we get to it. 2001, we just had the anniversary of the Bottlegate game, which were you there, Chud, for that?
You know what? I was not. I
Okay.
almost went, but and I was in Toledo, and I was a photographer, anchor, reporter. I did it all, and I shot Browns games back then. And I was supposed to go, and the reporter, anchor, who I was going to go with, got sick and couldn't go, and we ended up just not going because we didn't go to every single Brown. We went to Lions and Browns games. I was almost going to be on the field at that in by the dog pound. I remember watching from home going, oh my God, I would have
Right.
been there.
It was insane. I remember being in the press box going, what the, it was
Yeah.
crazy. And then I was actually, so back then you could get on the field late in games. And I don't even remember how it worked, but I remember being down there and then they made the team come back out, right? Like they made them finish the last 30 seconds or whatever was left in the game. And these Browns are coming out like they're half getting dressed. They're just keep trying to get 11 guys out there. And I wound up standing on a sideline like 6 feet from Butch Davis as they went through this charade to finish the game. It was insanity. That whole thing was insane. But anyway, Zach wants to know in that game, who was the coach? Well, I just ruined it for you there. Coach, quarterback, leading rusher, and receiver. So think on that. Go back in your mind 22 years and think about the Bottlegate game.
Thought we asked him for some 80s
I know
questions, you know.
I gotta remind him that. Yeah.
I just watched I don't know why it popped up on my Facebook page last night. It was the anniversary, that's why, of
Yes.
the Browns beating the Oilers in 1988. It was the last game of the regular season. I remember going to that with my dad and brother, sitting up high at Municipal Stadium, freezing my you know what off, and what a win that was. And that got him into the playoffs to play Houston then the following week. Do you remember that?
I do. Was that a Clay Matthews interception? He had a big interception in one of those games, I remember, against
Yeah.
Houston. I think I went to see them play the Vikings that year. Maybe like the week before, I went to see him play the Vikings that year. One of those years. I know I went late and froze. Right? I mean, that's everybody. You went to a game and you froze. Like that's all I remember about going to the games.
I remember that Vikings game. I think they had like a fake punt
Yes,
or some fake.
Von Wader's
Yeah.
fake field goal, I think.
Von
Yeah.
Wade. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Van Wade.
And
See,
Van
and
Wader's, Van Wader's, yeah.
Van Wade, if, you know, we got some trivia then. I don't know why. I don't know why. I just do much better with those 80s and 90s teams with trivia than the some of these 2000s. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess the Holcomb couch thing wasn't too far off, except for the fact that it was before Big Ben came. So
Right. No, you were close. You were close. I thought about that
but
too. I
yeah.
think it's because your mind was fresher in the 80s, Judd.
Yeah, right. There's too much to remember now.
There's
All right, we both got the pick right last week. The Browns are 9-5, Cuttrack and Chud 10-4. That's not bad, man. We're 10-4 at 14 games. That's, I mean,
That's
we'll
pretty
take
good.
that.
Yep, no
Yeah.
doubt.
Now we move on. I think this is one of the tougher ones. I remember feeling this is the way I felt before that Denver game. There haven't been many. I guess my point is, I usually feel pretty good about my prediction, whether it goes right or wrong. I feel like I had at least, you know, good basis for my analogy. But this one is a tough one. You agree?
Oh, I certainly agree. No doubt.
Who goes first?
Think it's me this week, isn't it?
I think it is.
All right. All right. Well, I think the Browns benefit from Case Keenum and not CJ Stroud. And not that Keenum's bad. We saw him win games here, right? On short notice. He went on Thursday night. I think it was Thursday night or Monday night, maybe both Thursday and Monday. No, he can win games. Kevin Stefanski is really familiar with him, right? Had him in Minnesota, had him in Cleveland. But it's not the same player as CJ Stroud. He's a pocket guy. He got bailed out a couple of times last week against Tennessee. You mentioned Schultz, the tight end. He went up and set up their tying touchdown, and it looked like an interception. So, there's a drop off there from Stroud to Keenum. Tight or Texans are a little beat up. I said it earlier. I think the Browns are due to play a good game on the road. Like, I just think they are. I think defensively, they're due to play one. I think Myles Garrett is due to have a huge game. Now, it's tough for Laremy Tunsil at left tackle. He's good. Like, you don't see him giving up much. So maybe they put Miles on the other side and let him try to go attack that right tackle. They're on turf, which helps the speed rush there. I just think the defense is going to play well. I think they probably get Anthony Walker Jr. back. You probably get more of Denzel Ward this week than you had last week. Maybe even get Juan Thornhill back. So I think they're going to ride this momentum, Chud. And I'm going to go Browns 23-20.
Wow, okay. So that would be a three-game winning streak, and they've already had that would be their second this year.
Think that's right.
I think that's right. I think they've, man, 23-20. I'll tell you, regardless of what I was going to do, you just convinced me that the Browns can win this game. I mean, I feel like they already won. That's how good of a job you just did predicting it and giving the scenario. So here's where I stand. A lot of things I think about the running game and how they're just going to struggle to run the ball. The Texans defense is just so good right now. I think about, the fact that the Texans are favored with Keenum still in there. Kind of Vegas knows that kind of leads me down that other path. But yet, the Browns continue to get it done in with all these injuries. They ride that Flacco momentum you talk about, and you just think, hey, eventually they're going to win a game on the road, a big game, like you said. And here's the other thing, Scott. Stefanski's 9-0 in his career against the AFC South. I mean, he owns that division. I mean, how can you pick against that?
That's
Well,
a
I'm going
crazy
to.
stat. That's a good setup there,
Right.
bud.
I know it is. That is a crazy stat. I don't disagree with you. I think the Browns could win this game, but I'm gonna go back, and it's just the way they are on the road, and they gotta prove to me they can do it. You're gonna be man enough to predict it happening and say, hey, I believe they can do it and they're going to do it. I need them to show it to me because I don't know. I can't remember. I think I picked the Broncos. But I know that they. Oh, it was the Rams game. Yeah,
Rams, yep.
I picked the Rams to. I picked them to beat the Rams. I picked them to stop. I was Scott Petrick that week, saying I have faith in them, and they let me down. So I'm a little bit bitter from that. So that hurts me a little bit. I need to see them win on the road. And here's the other thing, I picked them to win 10 games. I think they're going to beat the Jets. So I think that the Jets is their 10th win. And I think you remember a couple of weeks ago, we both said that we could maybe see 11 happening. So I'm going to pick them to lose this week. Then I'm probably going to pick them to beat the Jets. That gives them their 10th win. And then that Cincinnati game, they lose it. They're at 10. They win, they're at 11. And that's kind of where I feel they're going to be. I just don't know if they can win three straight games to end the year. And not only would that be three straight, that'd be five
Five
straight.
straight.
So I think they're going to have another loss, and they could lose to the Bengals at the end of the year. But I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking this, but I'm going to go 23-17 Houston.
All right. I mean, that's certainly possible, Chud. It's a tough game to pick. You're right. Vegas knows stuff, and Vegas has the Texans favored, so I get that. And you're right. It's probably unrealistic to think they're going to win five in a row to finish the season. So it's especially with everything that's gone on, the injuries, Joe Flacco. So I get it. I think that's a solid pick. I just kind of feel like things are lining up for him, and maybe they quit lining up for him on Christmas Eve. Who knows? I do want one last thing. We talk about the playoffs. They're not out of the AFC North race. They're two games back of the Ravens, who right now are 11-3 and sit in first in the AFC playoff seedings, right? They're the top seed. They'd have the lone bye. But they're not out of it. They have the tiebreaker with the Ravens, and the Ravens have a tough schedule. I think it's San Francisco and then Miami and then Pittsburgh. So, if the Browns won this week and then Baltimore plays at San Francisco on Monday night. So, you know, if the Browns win this week, you know, win Sunday, and the Ravens lose Monday, then all of a sudden it's a game difference. And, you know, you can kind of start to see scenarios where the Browns could overtake the Ravens, right? And get that elusive AFC North title. Now, all the Ravens have to do, you know, they win one more, they get a little help, whatever. It can ha it they win that division. But it is. It's at San Francisco, home for Miami, home for Pittsburgh. So I just think it's worth keeping in the back of your head. If the Browns keep winning, right? That's the key. The Browns keep winning, they would have a chance. And then we talked about winning at home, they could have a home playoff game, right? So I just wanted to remind people that that's still a possibility.
Well, and I'll counter that with the Texans can still win their division.
Yes.
They're tied with
Yes.
Jacksonville and Indy right now. I mean, it's a cluster there.
Well,
So,
yeah, Jacksonville's like disintegrating, right?
yeah.
Lost three
Well,
in a
hey, right
row.
now,
Yeah.
if the playoffs started today, the Browns would play Jacksonville, and you'd love that matchup compared to playing Kansas City or
Miami?
Miami,
Yeah.
Kansas City or Miami,
Yeah,
because the
for
Ravens
sure.
would get the bye right now. I mean, you want to stay away from the Ravens, Kansas City, and Miami in that first round.
Right.
So
Or
that's
even Buffalo, right? If Buffalo happened to catch Miami, which probably isn't likely.
yeah. Oh
But yeah, I mean,
yeah.
right? You want the matchup with the AFC South, right?
Yeah,
Period.
right.
That's what you want to
Yeah,
watch out.
yeah. Exactly. You don't want the Bengals, you don't want the Bills. I know they couldn't face the Bengals in the first round, but you want that AFC South team. You're right. That gives you the best shot at a first game. Not that they couldn't beat one of those other teams in the first round, but I don't know. I don't want to go to Kansas City or Miami necessarily. I honestly, I'd probably rather go to Miami.
That's interesting. That's an interesting discussion we can have down the road. Because that,
Down the road, yeah.
yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, two really good teams, right? Yeah.
All right. This was good.
We're
Hey,
good.
Scott, Merry Christmas. We won't talk again until after
Yeah.
they I think we're gonna talk next Wednesday. Is that
Yeah, a
right?
week
That's what
from
we're
today. Yep.
we'll, that way we'll wrap up the Texans game, and then they'll give us a one-day preview of the Jets game.
Right, we got that Thursday night. Yeah, quick turnaround. But yeah, that's perfect, Chad. Merry Christmas to you. Thanks as always. Thanks everybody for listening. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks.